Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, on our last several programs, Deborah and I introduced our latest series, A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. And we started discussing the introduction to his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Things That Matter. Now, I think Charles Krauthammer is an exciting essayist to read. And if you've been reading along with us, you probably have discovered that he does have a unique structure for writing his essays, which I think makes them appealing to read but immensely thought-provoking. Now, as I mentioned in our early programs, I want to invite several special guests to help me with this series. James Brandon will be back with us, along with others, as we go through this. But today, I have a very special guest with me. At the present time, he is visiting in the States from his home at Edstone, England. I want to welcome Jude Fleury back to the program. The only thing different about Jude now, he is a senior at our Imperial Academy. And so welcome back, Jude.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always a great pleasure. So I thought what we could do today, I thought we might be able to talk about Krauthammer and his essay structure. But I just have to admit, Jude and I got together before the program and we discussed some of the essays that he really likes. And there's a few that I really like. So why don't we just discuss his essay structure with the one of your number one favorite essays. And that is titled, Winston Churchill, the Indispensable Man. And for all you out there listening, that's page 22 of Things That Matter. At least that's page 22 of the hardbound. So this was one of Jude's ideas. I had to do a little bit of reading ahead of time, by the way, Jude, so to get ready to discuss his structure. And I checked a couple textbooks and you know, that there really isn't an essay structure. Every writer kind of has the option to develop his own. Now, I'm sure that probably in school, if you're taught to write essays, you're going to be given a specific structure. But we did find, right after Mr. Krauthammer died, Politico came out with an analysis, kind of a little bit of a short analysis of his essays. And one of the analysts tells us his prose is spare and unadorned. Another analyst in that article said his essays are powerful because of their underlying thought. Another analyst said his pieces are tightly reasoned and almost command our approval and agreement. So that first one reminds me a little bit about Joseph Conrad. We are discussing Joseph Conrad in class right now for all of our listeners out there. And I've been reading to the students from his biography, The Mirror of the Sea. It's actually an autobiography. And he talks about the power of words. And when I was getting ready for this program, I couldn't help but think that you probably would agree that certainly Charles Krauthammer had a power with words. And his prose is really spare. And they say it's unadorned, but I think it's really pretty colorful when he gets across. So I'll just turn it over to you and tell me what you think here. So,
yeah, I think there's a number of reasons why Charles Krauthammer was so widely followed. So many people would listen to him. I thought it was interesting in the Politico piece that, let's see, who wrote that?
It was several different authors, I think.
Okay, anyway. It says Rich Lowry on the front. But anyway, in the Politico piece, it says he had a tremendous influence, not because he was plugged in, but because he was thinking better and thinking more deeply than everyone else. So, you know, you get some journalists that people listen to because they're news hawks and they're on Drudge Report 7 hours a day, and they come up with interesting comments because they know pretty much everything that's going on. But Charles Krauthammer was not, at least that's what the Politico piece says, he got a following because he thought deeper than other people. So he wasn't so much commenting on the news of the day, but he was commenting on general trends, kind of more like the trumpet would do it. So I thought that was interesting. Another thing that I noticed is all these essays are really short. They're like, I don't know, a page and a half, some of them, 2.5 pages, some of them, and the pages aren't that long. But it's kind of like, well, it's not much of a time commitment to read one. He has a really good hook at the start, so, you know, you're going to want to read to the end of it. And then the time commitment is so small that you're going to be like, well, it's going to take me, what is it, 2 minutes to read this whole thing? So let's just read it all the way through, kind of like the YouTube, the thing that YouTube markets on. It's like, oh, it's a minute and a half video. I can watch 10 of them, and then 20 videos later, you're still there.
I think one thing we need to consider just a little bit there is that, you know, he was writing for the Post, the Washington Post, and these were going into papers. So, you know, having done some of that writing myself over the years, sometimes you're limited. They give you a word count. And I know that, of course, I think a lot of the people out there know that I also write for Trumpet.com, The Trumpet, and Rural Vision. I finished that big project this summer, the Bible Story volume, which kept me away from writing in the magazines. Now I'm back in the magazines, and I had an unusual experience just recently. They said, you have all the space you need because we're short on articles this month. So I thought, wow, that's great. I'm going for it. But also, I think they, in some of our meetings, there are a few of our editors would like to see me write more like Krauthammer. And they've actually brought it in that instead of writing the 1,500-word articles, they'd like me to start writing about 750 words. So I'm actually looking forward to going through this book. But I think the one thing that when I read what those analysts said, I think one of the things that really strikes me about his essays, and of course we'll be bleeding into the next program as well, since I have you here in the States, we're going to use you as much as we can. But the thing that I thought about his essays that just struck me is he really does make you think. Not only is he a deep thinker, but he writes in such a way that it's like he throws these little gems out that you just can't like eat them and pass on. You've got to munch on them for a while. And so I think that is something you know, very creative. And also he sets you up for it. I mean, these may be 720 words or 750 words, but I can imagine as a writer, it probably took him, oh, I'm going to say maybe 2 days or even 3 days to get the essay boiled down to what we're able to read. So, I just think they are powerful because, as that one essayist says, or what one analyst says, because of their underlying thought. And he is definitely a deep thinker, but he wants us to become deep thinkers. And so let's talk a little bit about this one, Winston Churchill, The Indispensable Man. Now, hopefully all of you that are listening at home will, you know, either be reading along or make sure you read this. I just wanted to read that first paragraph, and then maybe that'll inspire some discussion of us, Jude. But you talked about the hook, and to me, I was the first time I read this, I was hooked immediately by the first four words, and I'll explain this in a minute. Here it is. Here it goes. This is right before the comma. It is just a parlor game, comma. That's how he opens this essay on Winston Churchill, by the way. He said, but since it only plays once every 100 years, it's hard to resist. Person of the century? Time magazine offered Albert Einstein an interesting and solid choice. Unfortunately, it is wrong. The only possible answer is Winston Churchill. Now, that hooked me right there.
Yeah, I started with the first paragraph and read right to the end. There's no question.
Yeah.
Hooked me too.
But I love that. It's just a parlor game. And so now he's not talking about Winston Churchill. You know, he's not talking about Albert Einstein. He's talking about the person of the century theme. It's like a parlor game. It's like playing Yahtzee. You know, if you think about it, is what he's saying. And, you know, Yahtzee is where you take the dice, you know, you shake them up, and then you have to count up the numbers. And so in some ways he's saying, well, the whole idea of person of the century, I mean, if you think about all the finagling and probably all the back, you know, the backroom politics are going on, who are we going to pick? You know, you wonder how much money is thrown around in the background to see, you know, to see who gets to be, you know, person of the century or like man of the year or woman of the year, you know. And in some ways, I think he's being a little sarcastic there, saying, look, this is a parlor game, but let's use it. Let's use it to our advantage now. And let's pick who really should be the person of the century. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good narrative device. It gets the reader thinking automatically and just kind of sets the stage. I mean, the title is Winston Churchill, the Indispensable Man. There's no mention of person of the century anywhere in there. But when he drops person of the century, you're like, wow, this is a big deal, isn't it? And it is. Like he sets it up, and then he kind of through the essay, he kind of debates here's why Einstein should have it, and then here's why Churchill should have it, and right. then he explains why Churchill has more evidence in his favor.
Right.
So, yeah, yep. It's a good way to open this and kind of to make the reader realize the magnitude of what we're debating here. So yeah. I like it.
You know, he could have chose someone different than Albert Einstein.
Yeah, if you drop your standards to Albert Einstein, I mean, nothing against Albert Einstein. He was a brilliant man. But if you get into that whole realm lower than Winston Churchill, there are a variety of choices that would
right.
be just as, you know, where it wouldn't be too much of a difference. So,
but I think Albert Einstein would be the most known.
Oh, yeah.
And I think
distinctive.
That's, yeah.
But even in the, there's a biography of Einstein by Walter Isaacson that I read, and Isaacson points out that, you know, Einstein was not even, you know, there were other scientists in the 21st century that, or sorry, in the 20th century, my bad, that made just as many advancements, but he had the distinctive look and the hair and the witticisms and everything going for him. And not that he didn't make advancements for science, but he just had a lot going for him to create this kind of celebrity aura.
Persona.
That, and yeah. Everyone, you know, you see Einstein's face and you know him, but you don't really see, you know, Max Planck or whoever else and think, oh, yeah, that's right. That scientist. Right. Einstein has a lot going for him.
Right. He's on a lot of T-shirts. Einstein is.
Yeah.
But I think that second paragraph is really good. It says, why? Because only Churchill carries that absolutely required criterion, indispensability. Without Churchill, the world today would be unrecognizable, dark, impoverished, tortured. And so I mean, that's a really that's the power of words. I mean, there's those – how many words did he use there? Three. It would be dark, impoverished, tortured. Those three words say a lot. And there's a lot of power behind them. But he said, without Einstein, he has a question mark. Einstein was certainly the best mind of the century. And then he talks about his 1905 trifecta. And he goes on to talk about the Brownian motion. I had to look that up. I didn't know what that was. And I mean, I read the whole kind of like two or three pages of what it is. And I still couldn't explain it, you know, because it's about... it's about the way particles, you know, act inside a liquid. And I thought, wow. I didn't take physics in high school, by the way. I didn't have to. I took chemistry, but I didn't have to take physics. And so shame on me. But then, of course, you know, he talks about the photoelectric effect. And, of course, then the special theory of relativity, which I think all of us are a little bit more familiar with. And so but what he's saying is, even if Einstein hadn't figured those out, someone else would have.
Yeah. So that's Krauthammer's point, is that, you know, Churchill was indispensable and Einstein was not. Einstein had definitely some evidence on his side for person of the century. You know, he did a lot for science and for humanity, but, you know, if he hadn't done what he did, somebody else would have. And Krauthammer's point is that if Churchill never existed, who else would have been able to take his place? What would have happened without Churchill?
Right.
And it's scary to think about, but that's kind of what Krauthammer wants you to think, because it shows the obvious contrast.
Right. I think the thing that is kind of impresses me about this essay is that, and again, this essay was first printed as an article. It was in 1999. I mean, this goes back a long way. But still, I mean, if you look at, let's say, for KPCG.fm, I mean, we've talked about Winston Churchill quite a bit. And we're probably more knowledgeable about it than a lot of people. But to me, this is a timeless essay because it's still so true. And but the thing is about this is he's really kind of a master at he throws out this kind of like electric opening, calling the person of the century a parlor game. But then he brings in two very important recognizable characters. But then he starts to give us facts. And so he's presenting all these different views. And one of the things that I get when I read all these views is that Charles Krauthammer was a very well-read man. And he's just taking advantage of all of this knowledge that he's gained. And, you know, he was very, very well-educated. But yet, if you look at what he's giving there, he's giving you all these different views. And to me, what's really interesting about doing that, he's getting you to think, you know, and he's really almost testing you on what you know. And, you know, it's like what I didn't know. I mean, that's just kind of my background. I have to look it up. I just can't pass Brownian, you know, and not know what it means. You know, I'm not going to just skip over it. But that's I think that's really part of his style is he presents different views, but then I think another point about his essay is then he begins to weave his own personal views as you read along, and so he doesn't use the word I, but I think for me, Jude, when I read these essays, it's there, it's unwritten I. I mean, he's telling you what he thinks, but he does it in such a concealed way that you're just automatically following along. There's a bone and you're a dog and he's just like pulling you along with the bone. And I'm actually learning, you know, a lot from just reading these essays. And they really do stimulate your thinking. So again, he talks about Einstein, and he talks about how important relativity was, but he's saying that someone else was very close to this, you know, discovering it anyway. Then if you go to page 23 at the top, and he says, take away Churchill in 1940, on the other hand, and Britain would have settled with Hitler, or worse. And of course, we know that from history. You know, he's talking about Chamberlain there, when Chamberlain had supposedly this peace treaty with Hitler. And so we know the history there. And he says Nazism would have prevailed. Hitler would have achieved what no other tyrant, not even Napoleon, had ever achieved, and that's mastery of Europe. Civilization would have descended into a darkness the likes of which it had never known. So again, look at what he communicates there, and yet he is spare in his word choice. I mean, there's a lot that's like bulging with information, that paragraph. So, you know, I would have to say he's creatively spare.
Yeah. I think that's probably a pretty concise way of saying it, as Krauthammer himself is very concise. Just 2.5 pages and explains why Winston Churchill is the man of the century. That's not an easy thing to do. You could write a book about that.
Right.
But he doesn't do that. You can probably imagine him maybe writing, I don't know, 2,500 words, 1,500 words, something like that, and then just taking it out a sentence at a time, making it more concise, paring it down, just writing it in as few words as possible to communicate the most thought in the least amount of words. He had a gift for that. So, and it's good to read that. As a student, it's easy to be like, oh, what's my word count? Got to meet the word count, type in some more filler words so that I make it to the word count on time, which is not at all what you should do if you're writing professionally, but and it's not what Krauthammer did. So yeah, I have a lot of respect for that. Just trying to make it as concise as possible so that the reader doesn't have to spend forever getting this wisdom from him.
Right. Right. I think in some ways, you know, it is a kind of, you know, with news. I mean, he was writing for newspapers, but there is kind of a, there's a way of doing it that I think he's just a genius at it. I mean, he talks about, he said, yet every once in a while, a single person arises without whom everything would be different. And he keeps, it's like he now, then he says such a man was Churchill. So he doesn't, as he's writing the essay, he doesn't let us forget about Churchill. You know, in other words, it isn't just a zing at the beginning and then a zing at the end. He keeps slipping him back in. And he said, after having single-handedly saved Western civilization from Nazi barbarism, Churchill was, of course, not sufficient in bringing victory, but he was uniquely necessary. He then immediately rose to warn prophetically against its sister barbarism, Soviet communism. I mean, if you look at some of the books written on Churchill, you might have to go through three volumes to get to that part. And he gives us this history in a couple paragraphs. And, of course, I think, you know, because we have studied so much on Winston Churchill, it's easier for us to understand this essay, you know. But I know when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, Churchill was someone that people made fun of. You know, I mean, it was like he was, they would make fun of his cigar, they'd make fun of his chubbiness, you know. Of course, they made fun of the Queen as well. You know, Queen Elizabeth, the Beatles were well known for that. But notice that he also brings up Gandhi. I mean, he's talking about Churchill. He says, now Churchill is now disparaged for not sharing our multicultural late 20th century sensibilities. His disrespect for the suffrage movement. I mean, you know, the feminists go crazy with that. His disdain for Gandhi. You know, when I was in high school, one of my major history classes was on the decolonization of Africa. You know, we were taught to hate empire. You know, it was a Catholic school. But yet here, you know, the Catholics were part of the Holy Roman Empire. I mean, I also had a history class on that in Catholic school. But notice, I think it's also great what he brings in. He says, but that kind of criticism is akin to dethroning Lincoln as the greatest of 19th century Americans because he shared many of his era's appalling prejudice against black people. So in some ways, this essay is still so current to today because, I mean, just think of the attacks on Thomas Jefferson recently. You know, it's like anything, you know, there's even essays in here about the white men and the white privileges. He's really, in this essay, he's really going after the liberal thinkers or the left-leaning thinkers or the radical left. I mean, this is back in 1999 he's going after it. And he's saying, you know, this is what's happening. You know, there are people who will praise Gandhi over Churchill. You know that. And, you know, that's happening today. You know, even your dad brought out on the Trumpet Daily today that people will praise China. Here's their 70th anniversary was this week. And they're praising, Chinese communism and how great it's been for the people. If you go talk to some of the Chinese people in Taiwan or in Hong Kong, you're not going to hear them say it. You know, So it is. I think it's probably one of the great essays, and I'm glad it's right in the beginning of the book, too. I think there's one other statement in there that's really good. It says, the uniqueness of the 20th century lies not in its science, but in its politics. And that's one thing that my wife has noticed about Charles Krauthammer. You know, we both grew up probably around the same time he did, and, you know, he went on to the Ivy League school. I stayed at a semi-private college. Of course, my wife went to some pretty good schools as well. She went away to boarding school even in high school. But she definitely would agree what he's saying there. The big thing in the 20th century isn't science, it's politics. And look at how politics is changing the face you know, of America right now. I mean, it's sad what's happening. And you know, I know we do watch Fox News, and you know, it is incredible what's happening. Is, you know, now the American people are going to be subject to impeachment for the next year or two. You know, before it was the Russian collusion. That's been debunked. So now they come up with something else. And it sounds really big, like this is really big news. We should impeach them. And I know financially I'm doing pretty well right now. You know, and that is a Trump. It's a Trump, you know, effort to, you know, kind of restore America to, you know, to a good, you know, state again. And so... So anyway, I don't want to do all the talking. Go ahead. I know you have more thoughts on this essay. So
yeah, I have a couple actually. I think one thing that's just really stands out to me about Krauthammer's thought and writing is that he doesn't just look at the issue on the surface, and you know that's not just a platitude way, or that's not just a platitude. I mean, he looks at the entire picture. And what I mean by that is, you know, you couldn't just take any writer and get the statement, the uniqueness of the 20th century lies not in its science, but in its politics. You know, most people, if they were given, if they had to contrast Churchill and Einstein, they would look only at Churchill and Einstein. Well, what did Churchill do? What did Einstein do? But, you know, Krauthammer looks at not only what they did, but also the surroundings that they lived in, you know, the time period that they lived in. He looks at the whole picture. And even outside of that, you know, he made the reference to Lincoln, and that's, you know, it's an argument by analogy. He's not only looking at the surroundings, the immediate surroundings of Churchill and Einstein, he's looking at them in the perspective of world history. And that's just a huge, well, it's a big step to take in terms of thinking, because there's just so many more things that you open – there's so many more possibilities that you're open to once you start considering the surroundings, history, you know, all that surrounded these men, what they lived in, everything like that. And he's able to make connections based on how much he's read, what he knows. And that's just – I think that's why his thinking is on a higher plane than so many other people, because – he looked at the whole picture. He didn't just look at one group. He looked at the entire thing.
I think that reveals the depth of his education. Well,
sure.
You might be shocked at this, but that's all the time we have for today's program. So next time, we'll continue our discussion of Charles Krauthammer's book of essays titled Things That Matter. You can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.